that's the time that we appointed for this personnel manual. And so we'll call this meeting to order and have Chris take a roll call, please.
Council President Cardoza?
Here.
Councilmember Jones?
Here.
Councilmember Boobin Vanderhaar?
Yep.
Councilmember Steer?
Yes.
Mayor Nelson?
Here. All right, everybody's here, and we'll let our illustrious attorney lead us on through the rest of this. And if Chris told me right, we're on chapter 13?
Chapter 12.
Well.
Just 12. This is going to slide. Hopefully it doesn't fall. Good evening, Mayor, Council. For the record, Richard Roots. We are on chapter 12. We've allotted an hour or so to go through this. There's not that many pages. So why don't we just dive right in? The first issue there is the vacation leave, so we can discuss that a little bit. One of the issues that was brought up that may change this is two issues. Number one that we can further vet is if we want to have the employees, the directors, be exempt or non-exempt. The question came up last time about clocking in and out for them, and that's not permissible. If we want to go with the clock in, clock out, we would have to have them change back down to full-time employees. And then under Part B, I'll work those numbers again. The state numbers are a little bit different, so I'll try to work those numbers in. I think the direction was at one point to follow the state numbers. So they've got a 0 to 5, 5 to 10, 10 to 15, 15 plus on the vacation accrual, if you want to do that. And I can give you those numbers. So it would change it a little bit. So the directors would get, it would go back to a chart, but they would get a little bit more than the regular full-time employees, starting at 4.6 and then topping out at 6.5, whereas the full-time employees would start out at 3.7. These are per pay period, 3.7, and then top out at a 6.5 on that. So what are your thoughts on those two issues? Number one, keeping exempt for the directors or going to the full-time, and then bumping those vacation hours from a straight amount to a graduated scale, or do you like the straight amount on that? Joe?
My thing, I don't mean to interrupt you. My iPad just freaked out and a whole bunch of apps disappeared, so I'm trying to reinstall Cabinet and hope that my stuff is still there. So when you say the straight amount, are you referring to what was listed in there?
What's listed in there under 12.2.1b is the exempt employees getting 7.7 hours per pay period, or 15.4 per month. In discussing it with Pat and going back through, that's for the executives, for the state. We were operating under the assumption of doing the executives, but probably more appropriate if we follow the state, we would fall into that classification of professional administrative computer, which puts it back on the graduated level. So we can stay at that 7.7 per pay period if you're in favor of it, or we can go to a graduated and any other numbers in between. But if
so, my concern with respect to the 7 point whatever is, it ended up being, and I think I said this in a comment on a document I sent to you, it ended up being like 5 weeks of vacation a year, and I just wasn't confident that we could spare every director to be gone for 5 weeks out of the year.
Yeah.
Also, in terms of just, because I, you know, my thing is giving the federal perspective, everybody accrues at the same rate for the most part in the federal system, so it's all just based on the time in service, the number of years worked and stuff, so, so I wouldn't be opposed to just having everybody fall under the same. I'm not sure why there's separate. I mean, I know it's just, well, the state has it, so we're jumping on that, but just with the difference in size of employment, I'm not sure. I would like to have a discussion about whether that makes sense or why there's a, like, why we need to have the different levels.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just interested in what other people have to say.
The more experience they get, the older they get, so they need more vacation.
Mm. Better watch out. That's an age discrimination claim waiting to happen.
Well, it seems like the directors, they're cut out of their the comp time, so it seems like, you know, the 7.7 seems generous, but when you think of what we cut them out of by putting them in the executive deal, it might be all right.
Well, it's also why they're paid more. Oh, no, it's just, that's also why they're paid more. I mean, yeah.
Richard, did you have a comment that I interrupted you from?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
I'm so frustrated.
Further comment?
Richard?
Yes, Pat.
I'll weigh in here. I think it would be a good morale issue to keep everybody on the same. I don't like having separate tiers.
So full-time employees would be on the same scale as the directors?
Correct. Everybody across the board gets the same.
Okay.
As far as that. Now, as far as how we get to those hours worked and what those are, I think there can be some discussion. I have looked at the state policy, and I'm just going off of the Idaho Department of Human Resources. They actually have three tiers.
Right.
I wouldn't necessarily have a problem going with the middle tier for everybody. I think that's a little, unfortunately, it's a little generous for the lower tier and maybe a little restrictive or ungenerous to the top tier. But I don't have a problem looking at that if that's the route. And if you're going to go 5, 10, 15, and 20, is that what we are thinking?
How it's broken down there is 0 to 5, 5 to 10, 10 to 15, and 15 plus.
So 0 to 5 is actually going to be 4.6, 9.2 times 12, which is, what is that? You have, if we go off of the state.
About 18.
Yeah, so that's I'm going to figure this out. 18, 1, 2, 9. It's 100.4, so it's a little over 2 weeks. I think it would really, to me, I guess we can start off somebody. I have an issue starting somebody off with that much vacation. I don't have an issue as far as gaining up to somebody who's been here 15 years, 20 years, getting 4 weeks. I don't have an issue with that.
Okay.
I just have an issue of giving somebody who's been here for a year, by the time they've worked a year, they have 2 weeks of vacation. And I'm talking, you know, I'm not necessarily talking somebody who's coming in that we have to. I know there's been talk about having to, maybe we hire a new director, okay? And then obviously they might have a different starting area. I don't know if I'm really for that. I guess I understand the reasoning why. I mean, obviously, if we start somebody at an hour, you know, a 1 week vacation, and then we hire somebody who's a director, do we start them at 1 week vacation? I don't know. But I would rather see everybody at the same. I just think it doesn't create any division. And, you know, if everybody was the same across the board and you guys weren't compensated, and I understand where we're coming from trying to get the extra hours, and I'd be more willing to even look at that too. You know, if it's because of extra hours put in, then by all means, let's have that discussion. But I don't, I think I'd rather, instead of giving somebody who's working 60, 70 hours a week, if that's happening, which I think is a problem to begin with, instead of giving you the extra week, well, then we need to adjust your pay.
Right.
I'm for keeping everybody the same. And then what we agreed of, what those levels are at 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, I guess we can have that discussion.
What are the other council members' thoughts on one scale or one chart?
Everybody kind of comfortable with that, or okay?
Doc, the only thing that I look at is if you've got a individual that might have 15 years with the Meridian, decides to come to us, and then he's only going to get to 6.6 hours to start. I don't know if that's an enticement to bring good quality people to the city. But then again, he's given up 4 weeks with Meridian to come to us. But I don't know how you change that to be fair to somebody with a lot of seniority coming over. You know, he voluntarily comes, but if it gives us depth, there should be some kind of reward to that. But how you approach it or address it, I don't know how to be fair to somebody like that comes with a lot of experience, which would be a betterment for the city.
Perhaps I can work up a paragraph that, with council approval, we could bring it forward for somebody that they would get credited service just against the vacation time if they were coming from a lateral transfer from another jurisdiction with commensurate experience and time there. So, for example, you know, if it was an engineer or something coming across, we could at least consider that, because somebody may think, gosh, this is a great opportunity, but I'm losing 3 weeks of vacation or 2 weeks of vacation, whatever type of thing. So.
Yeah, that would make it a lot more fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's gonna, I know, be a, in the state we used to do something similar to that.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to attract good personnel if they're going to be penalized to jump.
Yeah.
So.
Well, are we taking away from what directors are getting now then?
No, I don't have those numbers in front of me right now, but I can, John might know right off the top.
Well, as long as we're not giving demotions for.
John, do you know off the top of your head what the high,
I think our breakdown is different, but is that the
we give for vacation?
Yeah.
Currently we give anybody that's got in excess of 20,800 hours of service, which is 10 years, they earn 13.33 hours per month. And that's the top level that we have in our system. Yeah.
13.33, and here it would be 13, so we would have to adjust that a little bit, so we took care of that 0.33, so we wouldn't be taking away something.
What is 13.33? I mean, I guess I can do it, but times 12.
I'll do it real fast.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. 159.96.
So it's 4 weeks.
I don't know if I don't know if I'm making this more complicated or not, but in the federal government, like I think it's after 6 years you move up. So anyway, I'm in the second tier now, and so I earn 6 hours of annually vacation leave every 2 week pay period. But then the last pay period, it's 10 hours, and it's just to round it out to a nice even number, so we don't end up with this like 159.96 thing. So I don't know if it would be simpler to say, you know, 13 hours per pay period or per month, just anyway, to break it down so that it was more round numbers, and then have a makeup period at the end of the year. And then that way too, after they've completed the entire year is when they would get the bigger amount. I don't know if that makes it more complicated or not. It would be the same total number at the end, you know, for the whole year, but I don't know if that simplifies things in terms of just using nice round numbers.
Yeah, or we could just, I mean, we could certainly just round it to a nice even number each accrual period.
That might be simpler too, because then you know, if I've, you know, so if you're earning, well, for like we already have one that's 10 hours per month, but then you know exactly, like, if I work two pay periods, I can take this many days off and that kind of a thing instead of
okay.
Point. I can take 2 days and 0.67 hours.
I got to come in for 13 minutes one day.
Yeah, right?
Are we accruing off hours based, or are we just automatically giving hour? I mean, should I say, are we accruing off hours worked, or do we?
No.
So we're not, okay, so we're just.
So that's one thing that I put a note in here, and I'm really frustrated that my whole document disappeared, so I'm not going to remember all my notes. But like the sick leave one, we did at one point, at one of our discussions, we talked about converting it to the state, because the state actually does sick leave specifically on a hours worked basis. But for the rest of it, it's just if you're a full-time employee, this is what you get.
And typically, and just going off of what I deal with, we don't do any type of layoffs during the winter. So really everybody's getting their 40 hours.
Right.
So we really isn't going to, by doing an accrual basis of hours worked, it really isn't going to resolve anything. So we just say, you know, that it's 2 weeks after 5 years or 10 years, 3 weeks after 15, or 4 weeks after 20, and just do it that way. For you guys, it really isn't.
Challenging,
I guess, yeah.
Overly
but you'd still probably get the quarter stuff, because if you do the 40 hours divided by 12 is what, I mean, that's...
Well, that's why I'm saying, like, yeah. For example, instead of it being, like, 13 and a third per month, if it was just a straight 13, then it'd be 6.5. Like, you earn 6.5 hours in the first pay period, you earn 6.5 in the second. Like, halves are fine, but I think, like, the 6.67 and the 13.33 are confusing. And then, you could just make it straight, like six, instead of 13 and a third, just you earn six per pay period. And then you would have, I think I'm correct, in the last period, pay period would just be 10 hours. You get 10 hours of vacation in the last pay period of the month to take you up to 160. I'm not trying to overthink.
I don't have whatever's easier. I mean, it
all comes out the same.
Yeah, it all, yeah. My only concern is if we do it on a monthly basis, that's good. I didn't want to really do it on a yearly at the end of the year, they get to some big balloon, because then, you know, they can't use it at that point. So if we do it on a monthly basis, then that keeps them till the end of the month.
Does it actually accrue on a pay period basis or on a monthly basis?
Monthly basis. So the first pay period, the first pay day, the first pay day of every month, it accrues for the prior month. So you earn it during the month, and it gets posted to your account, first pay day of the month.
We're paid, or is everybody paid monthly or bi-weekly?
Bi-weekly.
Okay. Yeah. Would there be any benefit to doing vacation and sick leave that would accrue on a pay period basis? Or, I mean, does it ever become an issue where...
We've had an issue before where folks have asked to borrow against something they didn't have, and they earned it essentially. We're getting near the end of the month.
Yeah.
They earned it by working the month, but it just doesn't post till we process the first pay date in the next month. So you kind of run into that once in a while. It's kind of rare. I mean, there's some benefits to that.
So I guess I'm curious then, if it accrues on a monthly basis, I mean, there has to be some amount of, like, what if somebody quits halfway through, or, you know, they only work half the month or something? So it's just prorated then?
We prorate, yeah. It comes down to a manual calculation.
Yeah.
So I think there's some benefits to doing it after every pay period. I think everybody knows. What they've earned, they get it right away. You don't have the, you know, the proration typically that you have to do.
Would it be difficult to make that change? Because I think it... I mean, if there's already been situations where it's been an issue.
Yeah, it's not a problem. We can change it in the system. It'll accommodate this for sure.
Okay. I like that idea then. And then we can, if it simplifies things, we can just make the change in there to reflect then that they earn on a pay period basis or whatever for a total of X per year or something if we end up doing a catch-up at the end.
Yeah, we have to start clean at the beginning of a month. So we'll probably have to start January if it's adopted.
Yeah.
But yeah, not a problem.
That would sync then with the, I mean, that's how the federal does it too, even, yeah. So it's just the calendar year.
It might help a little bit more because that gives them that couple extra hours that they have to spend if we don't allow prepay. If they have to, because some you can't. I mean, you know, like the state, I know it doesn't allow you to borrow against it. But then that gives them that extra couple hours or 3 hours that they have that they wouldn't have until the following month if we do it on a biweekly basis. So that benefits by doing that.
Cool.
And then what do we want to do as far as what we give? So I guess that we haven't answered that after 5 years, 10 years.
I personally don't see a problem with only having three tiers. There's only three tiers in federal. It's four hours per pay period, 6 hours per pay period, and then 8 hours per pay period. And so once you hit 15 years, like you earn a full day of vacation for every 2 weeks you work. But that's it. So there's no like higher level to get to than that.
So after the first 5 years, you get 2 weeks?
Yeah, I'd have to, I swear I had this in a note, but like I said, it disappeared. I think it's like four, no, maybe it's, I think maybe it's 6 years and then I'm really sorry. I know that at 15 is when you go to the 8 hours. So it's just some division of below 15 years.
And that's per pay period?
Yeah.
So that actually gives you?
There's 26 pay periods. So,
So actually it's even more than 2 weeks.
Yeah, so it's 104 hours for the lowest one. And then it's a full 160 for the next one because you get that one 10-hour one.
I'm all right with that, if everybody else is.
Just having the three levels, not
just have three levels, and actually it's a benefit to them. So maybe we'll take some of my screwiness away.
So what were it, 0 to 5, 5 to 15, is that what you, and then 15 plus is?
Yeah, 0 to 5, you get 4 per pay period.
Okay.
5 to 10
would be
6.
With a 10-hour one at the end, so for a total of 160 that year.
And then
15 and up.
15 gets 8.
Yeah.
So I'm missing 5. You got 0 to 5, 5 to 10, and then 15 plus?
10 to 15. Well,
there's only 3 levels, so it's just a matter of how we want to split up anything under 15. If we want it to be 0 to 5 and then 5 to 15, or if we want to go like 0 to 6 or 0 to 7.
I wouldn't have a problem with 0 to 7, or actually maybe 0 to 6, give them that extra year, and then 6 to 15, and then 15 plus. And then actually rewarding them the first 6 years with an extra 2 days at over 2 weeks, give them 2.5 weeks.
What does that do to your accounting stuff, John?
As far as our budgets and things that nature?
Well, that plus changing everything over for the 0 to 6, 6 to 15, and 15 plus, what would we would?
It doesn't really necessarily affect anything in the system. I mean, really, we just go and make the change in the system. Where the impact, I think, comes into play is those folks that might be between those areas right now, where you've got someone that's, say, an 8-year employee, a 9-year employee, and they are approaching that 10-year window, and all of a sudden 10 years is pulled out from underneath them. Now they've got to go another 5. That would be the only concern or problem I would see, but from an accounting standpoint, it's not a problem for us to go change that system.
Okay.
It's just a matter of finding a clean point to start and stop from. But otherwise, that would be my only thing, is that obviously anytime you make a change, there's gonna be somebody caught in the crossfire.
Yeah.
And that would be the the only thing I can see.
And I don't think, and I don't think any of us want to take anything away. I don't have, and I don't either. I don't want it, somebody's already at that threshold, I'm not gonna push them back down. But I understand your point is they may have to wait an extra year or two to get that. How do you?
Well, we are only talking about like for the whole year, it's like, I'll do the math, it's like 12 hours or something. I mean, it's almost nothing.
And I guess maybe, how many employees is this really, I mean, how many employees, are most of our employees over 10 years already?
Let me see if I can get that.
Actually, I don't think there is a change. I mean, because like our highest, if what's in here right now is the highest that we give, the 13.33, that's 160 hours a year. So that's what you would be getting from year seven or six or whatever we set up to 15. So that's already, we're basically doing the status quo and then just doing another level above for 15. So I don't think anybody should be impacted nobody should be impacted negatively. I mean, people could be impacted positively.
What was your 15 year plus?
Eight per pay period.
Eight per pay.
Oh, pay period.
Yeah.
So you're getting 16 per month, whereas
yeah. Well, and calculating out the 13.33, it's 159.96, and that's what we put the second level is the 6 hours per pay period plus the 10 at the end. So it's 160. I mean, so it should be anybody who's going to move is just, I think it's just going to move up, but nobody should
go down.
I don't think. I guess the only. The only potential would be if we're doing the first level from 0 to 6, or if we were saying 6 or 7, if there's somebody that's already in the 5 to 10 year, but no, that the 10 hours per month for, no, that should, well, okay.
There's a lot of variables around it.
I got it. It's 16 hours. If there, for anybody that's in the like 5 to 6 year range, there would be a 16 hour difference because they right now they're at 10 hours per month and we'd be rolling them down to 8 essentially. So it's, yeah. So I would say we can just give them that 16 hours. It's 2 days.
I think you can grandfather them for
anybody that's
that one. Yeah, if you're the five to six compared to what we are right now.
That seems like the only one that I can tell right now would have a negative impact. Everybody else should roll up.
Yeah.
Let's see how many people we have in the second tier right now, which is the 5 to 10. We have 5 to 10. Some of them are just newbies and some are a little closer.
I guess it might also matter if the guy who's at 9.5 years rolls around to 10 next month, and then we push them all to 15.
Yeah, but if for the 10 and above is what is they're going to go higher anyway, okay. Or it's going to be equal.
Okay.
Because the for right now, I'll try to make this right now for 10 and above, they're making what you would make under our new schedule for like the mid grade. So it's still it's 160.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So in essence, we're creating another longevity.
Anybody who's already at 15 years is going to get more, than they currently
get. Okay, yeah. No, I'm all right with that.
So right now we have 11 people that are in that tier two, which is between 5 and 10 years. I don't know how many are just over 5 and how many are halfway and somewhere close, but there's 11 in that category, so a third.
But most of those are already, I guess I think the only concern that we have is the guy who's here between 5 and 6. Because anybody who's over 6 is already going to get what they're getting right now, so they're not losing anything.
Yeah.
If that's the way it works out, I mean, if you can make sure that's the way it works out.
Yeah, we can put a couple charts together.
Yeah, well, and I think if my calculations are correct, it's just a 16-hour difference. So for those people, I would say, like, we can probably just give them the 16 hours until they get to the next. Because it should only be, like, a year until they get to the next level.
Okay. I think I have my direction on that.
I think give them the 16 at the end of the year.
Yeah.
You need to write in a grandfather clause then to make sure that we take care of those people.
Those people that are close.
Yeah, the 5 to 6 year, if that's what it works out to be.
Can we go over that one more time, just just the variables you guys are talking about, just to make sure we got them.
So it's zero to the end of the sixth year of service?
Yeah, and then it's six, yeah, zero.
Zero to the end of the sixth year of service, you would accrue annual leave at a rate of 4 hours per pay period for a total of, I think, 104 a year. I think it's 104.
So 8 times 12 is 96.
But it's there's 26 pay periods.
104, yeah.
Yeah, so okay, it's 104. Yeah. And then from the first day of your seventh year through the last day of your 14th year,
yep.
You would accrue at a rate of 6 hours per pay period, except the last pay period is 10 hours. So your total for those years is 160. And then 15 years and above, you accrue at 8 hours a pay period, so it would be 208. I'm sorry. And so by our calculations, it should only be people who are like in the five to six, the over five, but under the end of the sixth year who would need that little adjustment, because everybody else should go up.
So it should be a 2-year window then.
Yeah.
Yeah. You right with
that? Yeah. I think the twins wanted to voice an opinion.
Nope.
Weren't you raising your hand?
I decided to put it down.
Okay.
Sure.
How about you, Bobby?
I'm good. Now that everything's not knowing what's going on.
It was clarified. My question was, is in 1 month, I've been here 10 years. That was what my question would be, to be clarified. That, so.
You'll stay.
Yeah, you still stay. Good, but.
I think even I understand it now.
Yeah, it's come fairly clear to me, too.
Bob, that wouldn't be a no, that'd be a hell no.
Okay.
I do have a couple of clarifications as
okay.
far as vacation before we move on. It does, I think, affect sick, too. Are we going to allow somebody to go over 40 hours with vacation? So say somebody works 4 9s, 36 hours, takes a vacation day, puts them at 44 hours. Is that something that we are going to allow? The state does allow it, but I don't have a problem with it. I don't think it should turn that 4 hours into overtime, though. That would be my only concern.
I apologize. Can you repeat one?
The state, under their policy, if you have worked 36 hours Monday through Thursday, Friday you want to take a vacation day, you cannot take more than the 4 hours, because that cuts you off at your 40 hours.
Okay.
So 40 hours a day. So are we going to let them take 8 hours, which I have no problem with? I think it works in our favor by doing that, because it helps get those numbers down. But my concern is I just want to be clear on, I do not approve or will approve, or I don't want to see that 4 hours now turns into overtime.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Or flip it so that the leave happened at the beginning of the week.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah
something like that.
Yeah.
What we do today, so let's just say in the circumstance where somebody took 8 hours of vacation, sick, comp, whatever it may be, on Monday, and then worked 38 hours the other 4 days, we would take 38 hours worked and take 2 hours of whatever comp or sick or vacation they wanted to use to round up 40. So they wouldn't actually have to use the other 6 hours of leave time that they would have put in on their time card. So really, all they're being charged for is 2 hours of leave time that they physically would create. So in that case, so you're saying, like, in that case, if you wanted to be gone the full day or half a day, you'd just get charged for a full day of leave?
Well, I guess if we're doing it that way, then I don't have that solves the problem, because it doesn't put them over 40. I didn't know if you were, you know, if you worked 4 days and you want to take that last day as the vacation, I don't have a problem paying the 8 hours, even if it puts you over 40. I have a problem paying overtime because it puts you over 40. I think it actually is in our benefit by letting them take the whole 8 hours, because it helps burn up that vacation. I think, you know, in whatever the way route everybody wants to go, my concern is as long as it doesn't turn into overtime, because it exceeds their 40 hours.
Yeah, and we wouldn't do that. So in the case, let's just say that we've had it happen on a time card before, where somebody actually physically works more than 40 hours, But they were also gone for one day. So they put in 4 days, they put in, or within that 7 day period, they put in 5 days of physical work and were gone on one day. Just wanting to keep a good track of it. That vacation or comp or sick, whatever they took that day, doesn't even come into play because they've physically worked 40 hours and they're getting paid for. So that would not, we never do that.
No, I'm not worried about.
I think what Pat's saying is, if there's a way we can legally do it, he's not opposed to it, and I agree. So that somebody would conceivably be able to get paid for 48 hours in that week, so long as we're not paying overtime for it. So, I take 8 hours of vacation on Monday, and then I do end up working another, 40 hours for the rest of the week. Can I get paid for 48 hours without us actually paying overtime? Because I physically only worked 40 hours, but that way I can take home more pay and that kind of stuff.
Okay, I got you.
Do we know if that's legal?
But that's not really where, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do the 40 hours and give them eight. But what I'm saying is if it's a half of a day.
I think it's six of one, half dozen of the other in the sense that either we let them take a vacation time to put them over 40 hours or we don't.
Well, if they work 5 days though, that's where I'm talking about if they only work 4 days and took a vacation.
No, and that's what I said, maybe you work four tens or something.
I thought you were talking 5/8 and a vacation.
No, no,
okay,
no.
Yeah, I don't problem. Yeah, we can legally do that. And you guys, if everybody's all right with that, I don't know.
So that's what we're wondering. Yeah.
How hard is it for the budgeting? Because you're going to have somebody working maybe 38 hours and then taking 8 hours of vacation time. And you've got two that are vacation compensated, you've got to pay out six.
Yeah, so if we're paying more than, say, 40 hours of pay a week, that could cause a problem. So, and if I'm understanding you correctly, so what we budget for is basically 40 hours of pay, whether it be leave time or it's holiday or whatever it may be, in a year, or per week, times 52 weeks in a year, that's how we budget. If we have the ability to work 40 and also be paid for 40 and then take additional leave time to get paid for that on a straight time basis, do I have that right?
Well, I guess I understand where you're coming from and maybe I don't see it that way because where I have the question then is what do you do when you have to pay somebody out? You don't have that money budgeted.
Yeah, that's
I'm a strong proponent and I try to even get my own job to do this because there's certain times they don't allow me to take vacation because we're not making money, which I think I don't think is fair. But and I don't know how you can do it. You'd have to pay out every month to an accrual to a carryover fund or something like that. And I know that's another logistic nightmare for you, and I don't want to do that. So I mean, if that's going to be a way, then I don't. But because that way, if somebody does have to pay somebody out, that's a huge hit on that budget.
Yeah.
Whereas if you already took that money out, because it should have already been budgeted, carried over, then, you know, it'd be easy. It would resolve it, and then it doesn't matter when you take vacation, how you take vacation, because the money is already in the budget.
Sure, sure.
But I don't know how much of a...
I think it would take a little bit of work as far as trying to figure out, an algorithm, if you will, on how to calculate that going forward on what an average might be per month. But I think there's a way. Certainly, there is a way. It would have to come in during the budgeting process.
Yeah, and that's something we can figure out. I mean, I don't want to make things complicated. That's not what I'm trying to do. I just,
too late.
Yeah. But if that's fine. If we want to just keep it at 40, then just cap it at 40. Then I'm all right with that.
Yeah, I mean, if that's what you guys are interested in, for sure, we can find a way. It's just a matter of making sure that we're being consistent in how we do it because we get too carried away with all these different variables. It becomes very tenuous in the system, and it's becomes a very labor intensive. But certainly, we can do it.
Yeah, I don't want anything labor intensive. You have enough to do.
Yeah, as long as it's straight.
Do you? Because a lot of stuff I know comes up. Somebody is sick. Are we going to let them take a vacation day if they have sick pay, or we make them take sick pay because there's. And I'll just go back to the state that we talked about. That state allows you to use a vacation day if you're ill and keep your sick days. So I suggest just something to, because I mean, if it comes up, I'd rather be proactive about this and have the answer now than have to deal with it at the time.
Bobby?
Can I make a comment on that?
Sure.
Wouldn't you want them to take the vacation day instead of the sick day?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I just want to make sure it's there. I just want to, yeah, I'm not saying.
But flopping that, you're saying like if you have a day of scheduled vacation and then you end up getting sick, like can you sub that way too?
Well, the state doesn't allow you to do it. If you're already on vacation, you're on vacation. Unless you have a doctor's note and say you're sick, then you'll switch it. But you can't call in, oh, Wednesday I was sick, so change Wednesday to a sick day. Yeah, you can't do that, but I just want to make sure, like I said, I'm just trying to get everything in there so everybody's clear and everybody's understanding, because, I mean, like Bobby says, it's better for us for them to take a vacation day.
Right.
So I just want to make sure that.
Okay. Let's jump down then to the paragraph 12, 2.2, and the accrual. We touched on this briefly last time. This is the 125% or so and an implementation date. I had John run some numbers, and if we do it at 125%, our excess cost to bring everybody down is $107,000. If we go to 150%, our cost, this is the excess cost to bring those people that are above that 150% down to 150% is almost 90,500. And then if we tried to bring them down to 175%, it's almost 75,500. So it's a pretty, even if we're going to 175% of the maximum to try to bring everybody in compliance, it's still a pretty big hit to the city to do that. There's a few people on this list that are significantly above it, so we have to figure out how we want to address that and is it appropriate. So what I've tried to do is given an October 1st of 2020 date, just proposed that they have that period of time to bring it down to that amount, or if we want to start it sooner, do we want to just a budget next year and cash them out for that excess so everybody's at that certain point and then implement the policy that they can't carry over that amount and they have to use it or lose it type of thing. We haven't had that in the past, and that's quite frankly why we have these numbers that are where they're at, which again are pretty significant amounts of money that, let's see, we've got one that's, I think it's a high, well, here's almost a 25,000. That's just to bring it down within compliance. That's not a cash out, so.
That's to the 125%?
That's at 125%, somebody's 25,000 just to buy off that 25%. Or so, whatever it is, to bring it down to the 125%, excuse me, that's 75% or whatever it is. So a couple of people are really messing up with those numbers, but we've got to figure out how to get a handle on it and then keep it in control.
Would it work to do something where basically we segment off, I haven't thought it through all the way, but something where we can extend payments, like cashing out for excess leave over like a 5 or more year period. And the employees would still have access to the leave if they want to use it. I mean, if it ends up working out that they can use it, or if they want to donate it or anything like that, they'd still have access to it, obviously. But just kind of would allow us to come up with a longer schedule in which to, it could even be something like we're paying out 100 hours of leave a year, and so anybody who has up to 100 will get that cashed out, and then in the next year would be another 100 hours or whatever, something like that.
I can certainly work with John on the numbers and see if that may be an option that gets this
number manageable. I'm curious, does it seem like that would work, or?
I think there's certainly a very optimistic. I think there's a way, so you're talking just kind of like a bucket where you separate this excess amount, put it into a bucket, kind of like a rainy day fund for that employee down the road to be used at some point in time.
Like essentially I want to make sure we're not disadvantaging these folks when it comes to the leave caps. So I haven't thought through all the way in terms of like how much of that leave should apply to the cap or not. But certainly, they would have access to the leave at all times to take it because it's already been earned. But like new leave should fall under the cap. So it would be segmented out sort of in that way. And then the goal would be, I mean, the employees can use it if they want to, and we'd certainly encourage that. But it basically would just give us a longer schedule under which to pay it out so we don't take such a huge hit, like all in 1 year or 2 years.
So
I think, John, I think what you were just saying was what Brianna was saying.
Sure.
I think that correct me if I'm wrong, what I think she's saying is that, and then we pay out of that cash out that fund every little bit every year for over 5 years or something. Oh. So if they don't use it, we're going to cash you out to okay. get you under that cap.
Okay. And over 5 year period.
Over the 5 year period.
Something
yeah.
like that. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't want them to like lose access to. I don't want like a huge leave sum, like if it's, you know, 250 hours or something, for them to on day one be over the cap, and so they're just losing all this leave. I mean, so segmenting it out in some fashion so that everybody's treated equally in terms of how the leave cap is applied starting from day one. But then, yeah, just gives us a greater opportunity, longer period of time to deal with the excess leave.
So we can put some charts and stuff together on that cost-wise, too.
Yeah.
So an amortization, 5 years, look at 5 years or more, look at different variables and things like that to see what it would work out to be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious what other people think. It just seems like if it's, you know, it's like $100,000 to just cash over that at once, that's a pretty big hit. So if we could spread it out so it's like 20 grand a year, you know, that's not nearly as bad. And maybe in the meantime, some employees use some of the leave, and so then we don't even end up cashing out all that much. Or
here's a consideration. I guess it goes back to that fundamental question. Do we want to have the policy of use it or lose it on vacation, that if they're given a certain amount and they try to, let's say it's 125%, and they go at the end of the year and they're at 140%, do we want to have a policy that they, and let's not talk about the overage right now, let's just talk about generally, do we want to have a policy of use it or lose it
in
place?
I think so, yes. And I think that has to exist in order for things like the voluntary leave transfer program to work.
Okay. So keeping that in mind then, with the way we want to deal with the overage, one of the considerations would be if I have, let's say I have 20 extra hours and I put it in this overage pot with payout sometime between 0 and 5 years, however the city budgets that, I have to be as an employee cognizant of using my accruing hours because if I dip into that overage amount, I won't be using my accrued hours unless I schedule something else. So it may be, and John and I can work on those numbers, that people will put that in. If they use more, they can pull it back out because that's a benefit to the city. But it may be that if they put it in there, then we will just amortize that out as a five-year window to pay them off to get it down type of thing.
Yeah, and what I was thinking is it wouldn't so much be like, and maybe this is just semantics, but the employee putting it in there, but rather like we would need to kind of look at how are we implementing this, the leave cap, and is it everybody starts at zero or is it everybody starts already, I mean, because everybody already has leave. And so is it just you start with whatever, and if you're already at the cap, everything over that, we pull out and, you know, and you have to start using your leave immediately, or do we, you know, just so kind of how are we approaching that? And then I think we decide then based on how we're approaching that, here's the chunk that we're lopping off of that and putting in this, you know, separate bucket for you, employee. And yeah, when you use leave, you know, it comes out under the new system and this stuff just kind of sits on the side. And if you end up wanting to take out of it, great. But otherwise, yeah, we're just going to work on cashing you out for it. But they're always welcome to take leave from it too.
Okay.
But we need, like, I think it'd probably be simplest if we explained it, like, they have to make an affirmative request, like, I'm taking that leave, just so there's no confusion, or they don't say we're, yeah.
Well, I think you have to put everybody probably a week under cap. That's where you're going to have to give them a week to accrue. So if you're already at if we're going to cap everybody at 125, we can't just bring everybody to 125. You're going to have to even go farther.
That's what I was thinking. Do we set everybody at 75% already? And then, and then anything they have over that, we go ahead and put in like the special bucket or, because I don't want to start everybody already at their cap, because then what that says is everybody schedule leave right now or you're not going to be earning
any. Do that. So I think, you just got to figure out where that, I mean, really do, how many people are we over 250%? Or, which is going to be, let's just say how many people, if we get 4 weeks, which is, 125% is 200 hours. So how many people do we have that have over 300 hours?
Well, I'm also wondering, do we just want to, so right now we have it where, 125% accrual, and then for the first year it's 200%. Would we rather just go ahead and institute, like, it's 125 straight, and then, like I was saying, just bring everybody to a percentage of that leave cap by putting their leave in the separate bucket, which they can access at all times, but otherwise it's like earmarked for payout.
It might be easier to do it that way, if you can do it that way.
We can.
Because otherwise, problem is then in your first year, if it's 200% and then, I guess in a couple of years, then it'll go down to 125. I mean, we're really pushing people to take a bunch of leave. Maybe we've already looked at it, but I'd be curious if we can sustain that, if everybody's trying to burn through that much leave in like a 4-year period.
I would think that most people are very cognizant of what their vacations are. I plan mine to the month. I know exactly when I'm going to hit my cap right now, even though it's 5 months from now. I know what pay period I'm going to hit my cap. So, I think if you're aware of it, you'd be very, what's going on. But I think also, and then once that pool, if you're talking about doing that bucket, they're allowed to tap into it at any time if they want, instead of us paying them out.
So I have one question. I don't mean to throw a wrench into this, but... So with the use or lose concept, that doesn't really apply if we just have a percentage cap, because you just stop accruing. So like in the federal government, there's no cap on accrual. So like, but there's a cap on carryover. So you can carry over, I think it's off the top of my head, I want to say it's like 140, maybe, no, it's, I think it's 240. Maybe it's 240, you can carry over. So once you get, for our purposes, like to the 15-year mark, you're earning 208 in a year. So by midway through, the second year, you'd be at your 240 thing, but you could accrue all the way to the end of the year. So at the end of the year, let's assume you take no leave for 2 years, you'd have 416 hours. And basically it's up to you to make sure that by the end of the year, you only have 240 or whatever that would roll over. And anything over that, you just lose. And that's what facilitates the voluntary leave transfer program. If you know you have, for example, 60 hours of leave that you're not going to have time to use, it's just going to disappear at the end of the year, then that's what usually compels people to donate and that kind of stuff. So the leave cap stuff, I guess I could understand how it works. Like if you're super planning out and you're like, okay, I know I have a vacation coming up in July, but I'm going to hit my leave cap in March. And so hopefully somebody will have a voluntary leave transfer program issue between March and July, because then I can donate exactly what I'm accruing between those times and still, maintain my cap and stuff. But that all has to be very happenstancy. Whereas if it's just at the end of the year, this is your maximum carryover and everything else gets wiped away, there's a little bit more flexibility. So I don't know. I don't want to throw a huge wrench in it, but I'm curious if people have a strong preference for one way or the other.
If I may add to that, just a little bit from an administrative standpoint, the cap at the end of the year, and you continue to accrue even though you may have gone over that cap at any given time during the year. But once we get to a set date.
January 1,
12/31, whatever it may be. 12/31 is what we use now. If you don't get yourself down to that cap or below, it just goes away. And we have the ability, the functionality in our enterprise system to do that. The problem administratively, if we don't do that, we just say, once you reach the cap at any given point of time during the year, it's kind of becomes really herky-jerky, because one pay period you're on, one pay period you're off. One you're on, one you're off. I mean, pretty soon you're having to monitor every single person because they've reached their cap. So next pay period, oh man, we forgot to turn Jim on. We've got to go back and do a leave time adjustment. It really becomes a nightmare administratively. It would work a lot better in the scenario that you laid out, where you have a time frame, say it's 12/31 or whatever it may be. I think we've discussed like May or April or something like that, or May also as an option.
Yeah.
And then you accrue up to, and you might end up with more than that at any given point in time, but as soon as you get to that cutoff point, the system will allow us to just slice it right off.
Like you, yeah, you basically like reset it every year.
Yeah.
And then in the federal system, you have the ability to like apply, basically to make an application to your supervisor and get approved, you know, explain if you're not going to have a chance to take it. You know, you have to have a legit reason. And if it's, you know, whatever department got super, super busy and we just couldn't take any leave, you know, then you can get a 1 or 2 month extension. But there's still a deadline that the carryover needs to have been used by and that kind of stuff. So if it sounds like that's going to be a much, 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 much simpler process from an administrative standpoint, then we might want to consider that further.
Yeah, but that's obviously not the sole, but that is an important consideration on our side, I'm sure.
I think it allows folks to plan their vacation better. I mean, we have employees if they want to speak up about which way they think they might prefer, but...
Well, I think that either way benefits them. I think
it lets you plan a lot better, yeah.
If it's, because it can, especially more towards the end, you have that extra to do. So, I think that's a good plan.
Well, I can see that this part would work, but I'm still a little concerned about people that have exceeded or are going to be above the cap, and then we decide how much they can take of that. We'll pay them on, it's not that we're taking it away, but we're being pretty arbitrary about how long do we make them wait, you know, to pay them out. And we're making it as simple on ourselves as we can. But, you know, I'm not so sure that we're following the letter of the law that the Department of Labor would like us to follow.
Well, so. I mean, they would still have access to take the leave at any point, and that's the only way they'd get paid for it right now anyway. I mean, aside from, like, leaving employment where they'd get a cash out, that's the only time they'd actually get that money in a lump sum. So as long as they still have access to take the leave, then... I think we're still good. I mean, as long as we're not wiping it away, which I'm not advocating, that would still be in a separate pot, and then we just have what's your maximum annual carryover.
Well, I think it gives us a mechanism to pay it out too, and that's where I think we're trying to do is if we can get it in the budget, we want to pay out, then we can pay out.
Okay. Perhaps what John and I will do, we'll sit down and run through some different scenarios. Trying to consider those things. It's just about 7 o'clock, so
we got through one page.
I think that's the hardest one, so I think.
Oh my goodness!
So we can either do that and then come back at the next council meeting with those proposals, and then talk about the sick leave.
I think we have that in the agenda, don't we?
Yeah,
it's in there later on.
Yeah, we do. If we wanted to do that, or if we wanted to come back with the charts and everything and talk about that, because we won't obviously have a chance to get that done. Right.
I would prefer we just hash out the rest of it tonight because there's not that much left. And then that way you guys can come back with one final review and be done with this. I mean, I think we all want to be done with this soon.
Okay.
I know I'm the one dragging it out, but I think we need to be done so we can get it implemented first of the year.
Okay. I'll see you in a little bit then. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. And we're going to end the work session, so I need a motion to do that.
Mr. Mayor, I would move that we adjourn the work session.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's moved and second. We adjourn the work session. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Okay, we're adjourned, and we will be starting.